All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said, you may be asking yourself, because, you know, we normally talk about UFOs, extraterrestrials, ghosts, spirits, space exploration, etc. But we, as you know, talk about futuristic science here. And if I were to tell you that someone had invented a device, something like that tricorder device that they used on Star Trek, and someone who has cancer, you could just take this device and dial up a frequency and just pass it over their body, and the cancer would go away. Wouldn't you think that's futuristic science? Well, it would be, and that is not what we're going to talk about. That's an example. But what if someone invented a very effective means of treating cancer that actually cures cancer? And what if it just happens that it comes from a substance the federal government doesn't want you or anybody else to even have any dealings with? They don't want you to touch it. They don't want you to do anything with it. It's very futuristic science, and a very odd response from the federal government if, in fact, that science is scientifically accurate. Very odd response, because it's the government telling you just go away and die. So we're going to dive into that. We're going to explore that tonight. And to help us to explore that are Dr. Bob Melamede and Robert Kane, both of them from the Cannabis Science Incorporated. Dr. Bob Melamede, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And Robert Kane, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you so very much for having me.
Gentlemen, Robert, you know this because I told you I contacted you after reading some articles about your product, the product that has been developed by Cannabis Science Incorporated, and the articles talked about people with serious cancers being healed without surgery, being cured without surgery, without radiation, and without chemotherapy. And so that really got my interest up. When it comes, I just so that everybody knows where I'm coming from, and so both of you know, when it comes to recreational use of marijuana, I don't, I have no interest in that. I'm, there are people who want to become politically active to get it legalized purely for their own recreational use. That's their business. If they want to do that, that's what they need to do. I'm not interested in the recreational use. But I am very interested in this very futuristic science that I read about, and I'm also quite curious and interested in government response to it. Dr. Melamede, let's begin with you and just give you an opportunity to sort of introduce yourself to the audience. Where are you from? What's your background? And then Robert Kane will do the same with you.
Well, I'm an associate professor at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. And I'm also president and CEO of Cannabis Science. And what we're doing is using modern knowledge of how the marijuana-like compounds that we all produce, how they can be regulated by supplementing them, essentially, with exocannabinoids, or really phytocannabinoids, cannabinoids from the plant. Because so many of the illnesses that we suffer today are really age-related illnesses. And they're actually caused by an imbalance in the inflammatory versus anti-inflammatory aspect of the immune response. So excessive inflammatory tends to promote age-related illnesses. And we used to need that when we lived in a dirtier environment just 100 years ago. So things have changed in our environment and our biochemistry has not adapted to it. But we should have the consciousness to understand modern day science and be able to apply that to a variety of life's conditions, because it can benefit so many of them, which are typically essentially free radical inflammatory based, and this tends to inhibit that.
Okay. Robert Kane, give us a little of your background and introduce yourself to me and the audience here.
Well, thank you, and I very much appreciate you having us on the show tonight. My background is a financial one. I was an Isabella Cannon Leadership Fellow from Elon University, which means I learned how to save the owls in the woods of Wisconsin to global project management and finance. And I used that to pretty much learn how to write effective business plans and business models. And then I worked on Wall Street for Stifel Nicolaus, a top 10 financial firm, New York Stock Exchange, for 12 years until I learned about this industry. And I could not believe my eyes when I saw companies like this developing medicine for people. I mean, the mission statement of cannabis science is to alleviate suffering and promote health through cannabinoid science. And I couldn't believe how many different barriers and blocks there were financially, economically, politically, socially, in the industry, you know, in the laws to prevent people from simply feeling better, you know, using something that's available to them that they could, you know, grow in their backyard and not even bother anybody.
All right. Now, this company, Cannabis Science Incorporated, if I'm not mistaken, is traded on the New York Stock Exchange, isn't it?
No. The Cannabis Science is traded on the over-the-counter bulletin board. The symbol is CBIS. Charlie Brown is sick, and Cannabis Science is going to make him better. But the Cannabis Science is not on the New York Stock Exchange, but we are a publicly traded company. We are the only publicly traded company in the United States that has true cannabis medicinal formulations. You know, that's what Cannabis Science does. They use cannabis extract-based formulations that they therefore license. So there's no direct buying, selling, or growing of the cannabis plant. And therefore, those formulations we found have medicinal applications to over two dozen different conditions, eight of which are cancer-based. And I'll let Dr. Bob Melamed get into that in a few minutes.
Okay. Now, this is what really interested me about your company and about what you're doing, is that it was strictly focused on producing pharmaceutical-grade formulations for the purpose of treating symptoms, diseases that people have. In other words, you have approached this from that standpoint as opposed to let's just legalize pot and everybody be happy. I mean, you've really focused on I hate to use the word medicinal, but what health values can be derived from this plant. Now, before we go any further, let me throw something at both of you that I read today and get your response to it. I've read a bunch of articles in getting ready for this show, but I read today that there is a difference between hemp and marijuana, and that the difference is rather large between hemp and marijuana. Would that be accurate?
Yes, it would.
Okay, can you explain that to us, Doctor?
Well, hemp products have been grown historically for thousands of years. And it was only with the onset of prohibition in the 1930s that marijuana was made illegal. And at that point, a distinction became whether you could have hemp that had no THC or marijuana that had THC. And they were both actually illegal until they remain illegal. You can't grow hemp in the United States either. But it's grown throughout the rest of the world and in Canada, and then those products that are grown in those other countries instead of our own are imported into our country. Makes a lot of sense.
And it's legal to import it?
You can import hemp products, sure, hemp seeds and hemp oils. There's a whole lot of different kinds of hemp-based products that are legal to import into the United States. You go to any health food store, or actually supermarkets, you can get them.
Okay. Now, hemp that has no THC and then marijuana that does have THC, medicinally speaking, is there an advantage of one of those over the other?
Absolutely.
Okay, which one has the advantage?
Plus THC.
Okay,
because
so
of the huge number of medicinal properties that particular compound has, especially in the context of the rest of the compounds that are not psychoactive but are produced by that plant.
All right, now we'll get into the science of all this in a minute, but I want to sort of clear the air on several things. For instance, prostitution. Now, you probably have not thought that that has any relationship to what you're doing, but it does in this way. Did you know prostitution is not illegal in the United States? It's only illegal on a state-by-state basis, and actually on a locale-by-locale basis. This is why in Nevada, prostitution is illegal in Las Vegas, but legal in Reno. There is no federal law against prostitution in the United States of America. Now, we have the exact flip of that when we get to hemp, when we get to marijuana. We have federal laws that say, no, 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 you can't do that. We'll throw you in jail and keep you there for a very long time if you grow marijuana. If you get caught growing it, you got a problem. That's at the federal level. Now, we have states that are legalizing it, and the feds saying, no, you can't do that. So it's the exact flip, the exact opposite of their position that they take with prostitution. With prostitution, there is no federal law. I'm curious as to how that makes sense. Could either of you supply me with an answer?
Well, the true answer is it doesn't make sense. You know, the system that has come into play here is simply a conflict between local, state, and then federal law. And because they're each a different legal system with different departments and enforcements, they each sometimes become in conflict with each other. Now, the state of Colorado has a state medical program, of which the United States federal government respects and is aware of. And a lot of times the statements that come from the federal government is, as long as you're compliant with these state programs, the federal government's not going to use any of these unnecessary resources to shut them down, even though that's not what we've entirely seen. Mm-hmm. But this comes from the question is, where does this all come from? How does this all stem? The conflicts are there. And when you start looking at it on a closer basis against the federal government, what you realize is three big facts jump out at you that start confusing you. And you start trying to follow the money and figure out where the common sense motivation is to have this be federally illegal. And the underlying reason that everything is federally illegal is because cannabis is regulated and scheduled as a Schedule I, or classified, excuse me, as a Schedule I narcotic, which means it has no medicinal purpose. Okay, other Schedule I's often are cocaine and heroin are often used as examples. So because it's on the Schedule I, therefore no doctor can recommend it with a prescription. Okay, these are only recommendations that these patients are getting in the state. The recommendation is that the cannabis medicine, and we call it cannabis, not marijuana. Marijuana was come up with this drug war. Mm-hmm. And that's a second part of this. Because the prison system was privatized, there's lots of people that feel that as the crack epidemic hit Washington, D.C., and all of them were thrown into prison, it was simply because jails need a certain amount of prisoners to make them profitable because we went to a private system from a public. But then you also notice that the United States government itself, the Department of Health and Human Services, was granted a United States patent. The patent number is 6630507, and on October 7th, 2003, it is the United States government is the one that any and all uses and application of cannabinoids as antioxidants and neutroprotectants. That's so, why can the government own this and then not let us use it? That's the first question. And then you go and look at the conflicts even among the federal system itself with the Veterans Administration. Okay, they have a directive 2010-035 which says the purpose of the Veterans Health Administration directive is to provide guidance on access and the use of medical marijuana by veterans patients, which means if you're a soldier and you live in one of the legal states that has a legal cannabis program, you can get medicine for your PTSD. If your leg got blown off and you live in a state like New York or New Jersey or Hawaii or Florida, not Hawaii, but Florida, then you have no access at this medicine for PTSD. And then you have the Government Medical Association organization, the American Medical Association and the American Nurse Association. They approve continuing education credits for worldwide healthcare professionals regarding medical cannabis research and treatments, and that organization is named Patients at a Time, and you can find them at medicalcannabis.com. So here you have a conflict between the state and the federal laws, and then you have conflict even among the federal laws and the federal system with the American Nurses Association and the American Medical Association endorsing it, the Veterans Affairs approving it for their soldiers, and the United States government itself owning the patent on cannabinoids themselves as medicine.
And then federal law enforcement and the Department of Justice saying, we're going to go after you.
Yes. I mean, there's part of the system that you have to be able to understand where the government comes from, and not being able to see the difference between a drug dealer and somebody who's growing medicinally. And we do use the word medicinally because it is medicine. And, you know, there's a debate on how much medicine do you need? Do you really need to be growing 10,000, 50,000, 80,000 plants for your medicine? You know, no. You know, patients, I don't believe that we need that many. I think that cannabis science and companies like it should have access to fields and to grows of those quantities so that they can help millions of people who are suffering needlessly.
Well, it's this angle that is the strange and unexplained part of this. I don't understand, and folks, you're going to hear in just a few minutes, because we have to take a break, you're going to hear about some great benefits medically. I don't understand the federal government telling people, hey folks, just go away and die. We're talking this evening with Dr. Bob Melamed and Robert Kane of Cannabis Science Incorporated. And we're talking about a situation. Now, we've not yet gotten into the science, but we've just been talking about a situation that exists related to cannabis science. I want to make a point, and then we're going to get into some of the medical things, some of the things that have been discovered to be very, very beneficial from this cannabis research. All right? I want to make a point. There is a flower called a poppy. Pretty flower. But from poppies come opium. And then there are all kinds of derivatives from opium, morphine being one of them. It is illegal for you to use morphine recreationally, but it is not illegal for you to use morphine with a prescription. If you have a medical condition that says you need morphine, you may use morphine if the doctor prescribes it, because it has medical benefits for you. This is why I'm a little baffled at the federal government here. Well, I'm not surprised about them taking the tack they've taken, but I'm a little baffled at what they use for reasoning here. What are they using for logic to back up why they are opposed to people being able to use cannabis medicinally. It baffles me. Cannabis is nowhere near as dangerous as morphine. It's not dangerous in that sense at all. It's not a narcotic. And morphine you can get with a doctor's prescription, but Robert Cain just described for us why you cannot get a doctor's prescription for medicinal, medical cannabis or its products. And that makes no sense. That makes no sense at all. Gentlemen, I have a sister. My sister has cancer. Now, she has had this for, I think, about, well over 10 years. And they've been treating it with chemotherapy. It never makes the tumor go away. And it's in a place where they say they can't operate. Chances are that she would not make it through the operation. So they treat it with chemotherapy. They at one time treated it with radiation. It never goes away. It simply shrinks in size, puts out fewer cancer cells. When they do the blood test, they find whatever it is they're looking for, it lowers the count, whatever it is. It never goes away. So I'm highly interested. I mean, I have a personal interest in anything that might hold some promise for curing her. And the article I read talked about people actually being cured with these products. So, doctor, talk with us a little about that. What types of cancer and other conditions have you found respond well and even are cured by these cannabis products?
Well, you have to understand that there are over 700 peer-reviewed articles describing how cannabinoids, be they the synthetic ones or some of the plant ones, or in some cases the plant itself, the extracts, how they kill a whole variety of cancer cells through a variety of pathways is very well documented. So why would anybody not expect that a concentrated form of that might not in fact benefit people, especially when there are so many anecdotal reports that that's what's true? And if you go on our website, you can see a couple of cases where, with our guidance, people self-administered topical cannabis preparations and got rid of some really nasty cancers, and some of which are in progress, so that people can actually follow what's going on as it happens. So, you know, you see up front what's going on. We're not hiding anything. We're watching with you. That's how much confidence we have from what we have seen. And, you know, the people want to share that who are undergoing these treatments, because they typically feel the miraculous nature of what they had happen, and the outrage that of not being able to have other people utilize that same kind of possibility.
Okay, now let's talk about the types of cancer that could be treated with this. I mean, now what about someone that has something internal? Is there some way they can get this medicine internally to that tumor?
Yes, under those conditions you have to typically eat high concentrations for a couple of months.
Okay, so you're eating high concentrations of what?
Of the plant extract.
The plant extract.
Yeah.
Okay, now this plant extract, is that done by your company? I mean, is that what you do, or is somebody
else?
Yes,
we have contract relationships with associates that produce that for us under our conditions, yes.
Okay, and so is that produced here in the United States?
In Colorado. That's why it's only available in Colorado. Uh-huh. But we're in the process of being able to expand in a state-by-state basis so that we can basically do within each medical marijuana state that would allow it to replicate what we've done in Colorado.
Robert, you addressed the issue of people growing marijuana. And, you know, do they need, you know, 80,000 plants for their own personal medicinal use? And, of course, I think that would raise an eyebrow. But obviously the company has to have a supply of good quality marijuana plants in order to have them processed into these products that you're talking about. Do you have to have some kind of grower's license, or how does that happen?
Everything that happens is in full compliance with the state of Colorado medical cannabis program. So most of what we do, again, is through licensing agreements to people that hold the permits that are allowed and permitted to have the cannabis organic plants of them which they use to create these formulations that we license to them.
Okay, so now, Doctor, are any of these formulations in a form where a person would get an injection, or is it all ingested orally if you have to get it internally?
It's all either oral or topical, yes, because you can use both, which would enhance depending on where there was a problem.
Do you know of any side effects to using this?
You have to adjust to it in a slow, slow manner. And at that point, your body adapts, so that it turns down the metabolism in the brain. And the metabolites like build up, actually wind up inhibiting the psychoactivity. So there are people who have built up quite gradually and never really have very significant effects. If you jump a little too high too fast, it's very unpleasant. Most people, and also in published animal studies, don't like to get too high. Whatever that means for them, they don't like it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you know, using this product would not then necessarily mean that you're getting high if it's used the way you recommend, right?
Yes. Because you become adapted to it, as well as adapted to the state of mind. You know, you have to question, what does get high mean? What does high really mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's an altered state of consciousness, but does that intrinsically mean it's bad and negative? Or can there be positive effects and outcomes that result from exploring that space as well?
Okay, so if a person gets high, as you say, whatever that means, from using the product, if they get high, does this inhibit their ability to work? Does it inhibit their ability to drive?
Oh. In many cases, really no, because they adapt through the use of that. People who otherwise could not work and could not drive because of their disability become functional enough that they can work. And there's a number of various elements through which that would be true. Fibromyalgia, people with severe forms of that, people with multiple sclerosis benefit tremendously from activating their endocannabinoid system by supplementing it with plant-based extracts.
Right. Now, you said that this endocannabinoid system is something we all have it. It's built into us.
Mm-hmm.
And that not getting the right amounts of that in our system actually affects, I believe you said, our immune system. Is that right?
Yes, because the cannabinoid system, with respect to the immune system, and actually the nervous system too, tends to balance out excessive stimulation, which often then results in excessive inflammation, which is in general degradatory. So the cannabinoid system naturally is something that's helping to balance the normal oscillations as things go back and forth between inflammation and turning it down. Inflammation, it's like a thermostat on the wall for heat within your body, and the cannabinoid system is integral part of that thermostat.
All right, so using the preparations that the formulations that your company has developed, a person with MS could expect to see improvement. Is that correct?
From experience that we've had with people using related products, yes. We haven't specifically utilized ours for that purpose at this point because we're focusing on the cancer story.
Okay, well, let's talk about cancer then. Give us a little bit of a rundown of one or two of the cases. What was it? What happened? And what did the person experience by using this?
Well, in the one case, a fairly significant squamous cell carcinoma came out from underneath the skin and then progressively was killed on the surface. Quite a significant ugly mushroom. You can see these all on the website. And over a fairly slow period of time with that case, that eventually died, disappeared, healed up, and now is normal skin.
And is this a type of cancer that could be fatal?
Well, if it continues to spread, they can be quite nasty. On our website is a third patient who has what his doctor said was the worst case of squamous cell carcinoma he ever saw. And after over 100 radiation treatments, the cancers would actually increase in size after radiation. So he's currently utilizing preparations and getting very dramatic results. And those are a work in progress on the website so that we can all watch and see what happens.
Okay. So how does this tell us a little bit about the medical mechanic? Well, okay, we have a break coming. When we come back, I want to hear a little bit about sort of the medical mechanics that are going on there. What is the cannabis formulation? What is it doing that is killing off the cancer? We'll get the answer to that when we come back. My guests this evening from the Cannabis Science Incorporated, Dr. Bob Melamed and Robert Kane. As we went away for break, I said I would like to hear a little bit of the mechanics of how this is working. What is it that the cannabis formulation is doing to the cancer that's causing it to die? What happens to it?
Well, that's what's so unique about how the cannabinoid system is modulated by this plant, because a foundational principle is that flowing energy organizes mass. That's what becomes life. And it turns out that the endocannabinoid system is a fundamental balancer, homeostatic balancer of so many of our body's basic systems. That's why it's involved in literally all of our body systems, you know, immune system, nervous system, digestive, reproductive, skeletal, etc. It's involved in how everything functions, and it does it in a way that typically keeps the system from getting over-revved. So it pulls it back a little bit, which leads to its anti-aging properties. But when it's dealing with cancer cells and it's modulating the flow of energy through those cells, it does it in such a fashion that the cells basically self-destruct. And then the surroundings are able to eat the mess up in a anti-inflammatory or a reduced inflammatory manner and fix the problem. It's pretty amazing.
All right, now, do you, Robert, you handle the public relations as well for the company.
Investor relations.
Oh, I'm sorry, the investor relations. Okay, I'm sorry. Well, let me ask you the question anyway.
Yes, sir.
People are really, really emotionally divided about this and about whether it should be legal or not legal. And how do you respond to that? How do you deal with that?
With the fact of whether or not it should be legal?
With people's emotions about this, because I mean, you're trying to advance a company here that's involved with a field in science that has a lot of emotional baggage out there in the public. How would you handle that?
The best, most efficient way we have of having what we consider a respectful respectful conversations so that both sides are, you know, feel respected for their emotional views, is to simply share the story of when we've personally learned that the cannabis was a plant and a medicine and not a harmful street drug. And we have found that sharing those stories have prompted thoughts or realizations of everyone, exactly in your case, where you have a family member or a friend or someone that you know that's hooked on a harmful painkiller. I mean, there was just a news release that more people die now from pharmaceutical drugs than traffic accidents. You know, Florida is getting shut down all the time for illegal pain clinics. And, you know, people do see some of this political agenda out there of, you know, centers and dispensaries and collectives getting shut down. But, you know, if some of them are doing some illegal activities, they should be shut down. We're talking about medicine here. So, you know, you come at it from the science and the medicinal side. You know, it looks a lot different than some of the things that people see that are a lot more interesting that the news likes to portray. And to get through all of that and of the misinformation campaign, I mean, Ronald Reagan said he has absolute proof that smoking one marijuana cigarette is equivalent to standing on Bikini Island during an atomic bomb blast. You know, this propaganda has been out there, and the older generation, I recommend them because they've seen through it. And the elderly are one of the industry's largest supporters. You know, these people are the ones taking the drugs every day. And there's organizations like the Silver Tour out of Florida who are targeting the education basis of, you know, explaining the benefits of all of these things to the senior citizens. And Dr. Melamed, you know, has a lot of experience on many ways that the cannabinoid system, we've talked about cancer, but, you know, maybe he wants to go in and take a couple minutes and explain how the elderly benefit, being that it's our largest population and medicinal base in the country. Dr. Bob?
Well, you have to look at what aging really is, and it's when the balance between synthesis and degradation has shifted. It's another one of these biological thermostats where the inflammatory activity tends to win out over the balance. Well, it's your body's production of endocannabinoids that typically has been that balance. So the totally 100% logical, you know, re-establishment of balance would be to supplement with more cannabinoid activity. So for things like arthritis, topical works. For a whole variety of age-related aches and pains, inabilities to sleep, inabilities to move properly. And then that cascades down, where once you give some of these older people some cannabis, they start to embrace their environment, their flow again, and it brings out their life again, and they move more and do more, and they feel better. They're being more alive. So it's a total natural for doing all of that. It stimulates your appetite, stimulates your sense of smell, stimulates your sensitivity to what's going on, and it tends to promote synthesis and growth and deposition of fat, things that are typically lost in the elderly. You know, so it does have anti-aging properties, and who needs them more, the elderly or the young? The young are already in the right balance. The young are naturally synthesizing more than they're degrading. And once you become an adult, you tend to, you know, slowly shift that into synthesis, losing out to the degradative process, and that's what aging is. And cannabis has been documented. The endocannabinoid system has been documented through some really nice genetic studies done but with what they call knockout mice that show if you don't have cannabinoid activity of the sort that gets people high, you wind up dying prematurely and much more nervous. And there's a variety of negative biochemistry associated with not having the ability to. Again, it's a thermostat. You know, how high are you? Different people are at different levels. And on one end, you have people who are very close-minded, who probably need a little more activity. And on the other end, you have people who probably don't need any because they're naturally open-minded and endowed and not sensitive to pain and more forward-looking, ready to embrace the unknown of the future. So, you know, it's everything's a balance. And the cannabinoid system is fundamentally involved in significant number of balancing acts in all of the tissues in our body. It's amazing. It just happens to be real.
There's a term that we're all familiar with. We've all heard it. It is a term that is used in talking about smoking marijuana. And that is, someone will refer to it as smoking dope. It actually is not dope. It is not a narcotic. Is it a drug? Well, as long as if you understand drug in the sense that it's not a narcotic, like aspirin is a drug. Marijuana is not a narcotic. So they're not actually smoking dope, are they?
No, not at all. They're smoking this plant, but that's the nickname.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean, I think, most that they think it's a narcotic.
Now, I ran across information today written by someone that is pro-medicinal use of marijuana. However, this person's writing said that this person said it's not healthy for you to use marijuana for smoking, that this is damaging to your lungs, and there are other ways of getting the medicinal benefits, and the smoking it is damaging to your lungs. And this person said that when you smoke a marijuana cigarette, a joint, that it has four times the carcinogenic, I'll get it said in a minute, carcinogenic tar that the same amount of cigarette tobacco would have, and that smoking it was not the way to go. What do you think about that?
Well, I actually published a paper back, I think, in 2005 on the difference between cannabis smoke and tobacco smoke. It doesn't matter how much tar there is there necessarily. What's important is the physiology, the biochemistry of one set of compounds versus the other. The cannabinoid smoke, whether containing carcinogens or not, winds up being protective so that it doesn't induce the cancer situation, which comes typically from this inflammatory response going a little bit awry. In any event, subsequent to that, a epidemiological study by a well-known pulmonologist who had been researching for years anyway, showing that cannabis smoke was irritating to a very significant degree, as you described, he did an epidemiological study expecting to see a correlation between cannabis and cancer similar.
People, and they said, okay, and they started fighting back. And the budget started increasing to the point, thanks to California legalizing in 96, where the interest money almost became more than the locals' money. And then we got to the state level. And what happened the entire time was that the federal government started to lose its momentum by trying to intimidate the people in the industry. So they switched to looking to intimidate the people in the government offices that issue the permits. And what happened in Arizona was the federal government said, hey, since we're not, you know, intimidating anybody who wants to be in the industry, we're going to try to intimidate the 30, you know, year old or the 65 year old, you know, that works and just makes $20,000 a year signing the paperwork. And whoever's name is on that license that's issued by the local government, we're going to go after them and throw them in jail. So the Arizona governor stopped and tried to get some clarification from the federal government on how hard and how fast and how much at risk her employees were, as well, you know, as the other people. And they got half an answer from Eric Holder's office, which was, you know, we're not after the small little grower. But the system, and again, this gets back to quantity, the formulation of the distribution of the medicine in Arizona. In some locations, the grows would get into the thousands of plants, and this is where we've continuously seen the federal government stop in and try to stop, you know, these programs, is when the plants start getting up into the thousands. And that's what we saw in Arizona, and people had paid a lot of money to purchase locations and to get consultants and to, you know, get the systems up and running, the application fees up, and then to cancel the program. You know, there was a liability there, and the industry is going to stand up. What happens is you're dealing, and this is what happens, you start dealing with the medicine side, And then you see it's kind of a life science and how many different parts of it is in life. This is something that Dr. Melamed has taught me. And what you learn is that it becomes a survival instinct. And when it's a survival instinct, people will do things that they normally won't do because of the laws of man. But when there's no other option and the people are suffering from morning till night, you know, we shouldn't be standing in their way. We should be doing everything we can to help them.
So what number of plants is permissible?
The Washington, D.C. model is what most people feel is the best for comfortability of the federal government, which is 98 plants. Since Washington, D.C. is a federal jurisdiction, their program calls for nobody to have more than 98 plants. And it seems like most people and the permits they issue out in California and Colorado and the other legal states across the country, there are 16, and, you know, hoping to get up to 26 by 2017 for full legalization. But most of them, you know, programs, and you don't see many busts or raids for people that are carrying under 98 plants.
Yeah, but you see, the problem with these limits are that cannabis, it really appears to be able to cure cancers of a variety of types. The amounts that are necessary are very high, and in order to produce them economically, you have to be able to have a very significant size grow and the appropriate number of patients, typically given higher plant counts because of this fundamental underlying need. And you got to work with it at that level. Otherwise, what you wind up doing is literally killing patients unnecessarily.
Absolutely.
Do you?
There's a reason for this, by the way. The reason is that this industry, being that it was, you know, under prohibition, is more of a black market that's legitimizing itself, and therefore the politicians sometimes forget to focus on the patient issue and are continuously focused on the criminal issue. And this is what's happened in New Jersey. The other theory is, why not follow the money? And if you follow the money, then sometimes that leads to the fact, I believe, the 7 largest pharmaceutical companies in the world, 4 of them are located and have world headquarters or you know, national headquarters here in New Jersey. And so this is the state where most people feel the larger pharmaceutical companies are going to try to enter the state and do this incorrectly, of course, with you know, the greed and the corruption that we see in so many other industries that are ruining the planet.
Okay, do you have the ear of any congressmen or senators that are on your side to try and get this legal so doctors can prescribe it?
I'm involved with associations like ACER, Americans for Safe Access. We've done lobbying in Washington, D.C. What we're doing at Cannabis Science, if you go to our websites, you can see these various cancer patients responding to the cannabis extracts. And what we want to see is the continuous growth of people willing to work with us in that fashion and reach the point where it just becomes so overwhelming that the population demands the change that'll become obvious. You know, become obvious how it's needed. You know, the fact that we have medical marijuana states, if the federal government is going to be wise and believe that we have a democracy where the vote actually matters, then they should try to find a way to, you know, implement something in a cooperative fashion consistent with the state laws. So we'll see where that goes. But Colorado's good because it's in our Constitution. The people have voted for it. And that would be such a fundamental assault on democracy to ignore that reality.
Yeah, and with that in mind, full legalization is up for vote this year in Colorado and California, right, Dr. Bob?
Yes, it is.
What do we mean by full legalization?
Regulate like alcohol is one of the options in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's basically tax and regulate models.
Well, people who are my age or older, I'm sorry, my age or younger, we didn't go through the years of World War II. I was born just after World War II.
Yeah, see, my age.
Yeah. So we don't remember personally, but I mean we can read about and know, but we don't remember that during World War II, The U.S. Military had such a tremendous need for hemp products that the U.S. government actually subsidized farmers and had the Grow Hemp for Victory program.
Hemp for Victory, yeah, it's a great movie.
Yeah. And they were trying to get farmers all over America to grow more hemp, grow more hemp, grow more hemp, because they needed a very large supply of hemp plants in order to make the products they needed. Now, what you said about the needs of being, being able to produce the medicines, the needs for large grows, reminded me of that fact. And I think, there are several huge questions in play that are perhaps obstacles for your industry. One of them, Robert, you were talking about the interplay between federal and state. That's a huge question over which we fought a civil war. The central issue was a different issue. But slavery was a symptomatic issue. The core issue was, does the federal government have the authority to override a state's law and constitution? And so there was a war fought over that. That question has never been settled, and I've said on this show, down through the years, and I've said it several times, anybody that thinks the civil war is over is totally unaware. The symptomatic issue has changed, but the core issue is the same. And that is, does the state have the right to order its own affairs? In this case, for instance, full legalization of marijuana, when the federal government steps in and says, no, you can't do that. Who's right? And this problem has persisted with us now since the days of the Civil War. And I don't think that's going to go away real soon. That would seem to be a big obstacle. Another big obstacle would seem to me to be that marijuana is one of the great cash cows for black ops. It's not the only one. There's cocaine, there's heroin. But illegal drugs, and it is an illegal drug now according to the federal government, is a great cash cow for black ops, and because we do have agencies of this government that basically are organized crime, and they're out there dealing with the illegal drugs, and dealing illegal drugs, transporting them, helping to launder the money. Portions of our government are involved in that. That's been pretty well established. How do you get around all that? Because, you were saying follow the money. How do you get around all of that?
I believe in the will of the people as they become more educated, because so many people's lives are touched by this cancer story. In Australia, for example, by the time you look at the 70-year-old population, 2/3 of the population has had skin cancer. So there's a global need, really, and in the United States, it's the same issue, in particular among fair-skinned lassies and laddies.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a real need, because typically these surgeries can be extremely nasty, and frequently the cancers come back. To have an alternative of just rubbing on an extract that doesn't even have psychoactivity when you're rubbing it on your cancer is a profoundly wonderful alternative that any sane person would opt for.
Well, yeah, but we're talking about politicians, not sane people.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. And those are the people who are cannabis deficient.
I saw a cartoon today. It was not a cartoon, actually, but it was a picture, a photograph, black and white photograph of Mark Twain, and then it had a quote of Mark Twain on there at the bottom of the picture, and it said, "Suppose you were an idiot. Now, suppose you were a member of Congress, but I repeat myself, Mark Twain had a way, didn't he? Okay. Now, in following the money, both of you, I think, I know Robert has mentioned, and I think you did too, mention something about the prisons. Prison's a big business in this country. It's a huge business in this country. And there are just tons and tons of these privately owned prisons that have a contract with maybe a sheriff's office or the state police or with the federal government. And they're housing prisoners for these jurisdictions. And you know, it's a multi-billion-dollar business. Here in the United States, we have the largest percentage of our population behind bars of any other nation in the industrialized world. That includes China. And right here in the land of the free, you statistically have the highest possibility of going to prison of any nation on earth.
Especially if you're black.
Well, there's that. But it's in such great numbers. I mean, percentage-wise, that's true. But if you talk about actual numbers, it's in such great numbers that white, black, brown, I mean, you got a big, big chance of going to prison just for being in the United States. I mean, the statistical opportunity to be put in prison is much higher than anywhere else on the planet. Most of the people that are in prison shouldn't be. I'm an ex-cop, and I'm anything but a bleeding-heart liberal about crime. I think crime really has to be addressed. But, you know, you reach a point where if you make it illegal, did you know that in almost every state it's illegal to carry an ice cream cone in your shirt pocket on Sunday?
It's one of those crazy duck laws, right?
Yeah. Now, this is the truth, okay? Now, we've got so many things that have been made criminal in this country that I guarantee you not one single person listening to my voice spent this day without breaking the law. You might not know what law you broke, but you broke laws. There are over 1 million laws piled on top of you. Every nanosecond of your life, you're under the crushing weight of those laws. And if some cop decides he wants to put you in jail, he can. Guarantee, all he's got to do is watch you for a day. And you'll do something for which he can't arrest you. And you didn't even know it was illegal. Now, that feeds this system of private prisons. In Colorado, if they go to full legalization, that means a lot of things. One thing would be that you won't be arresting people, and therefore you won't be putting them on trial, and you won't be convicting them of possession of marijuana. If that happens, there will be a significant drop in the number of people going into the prison system. And on the one hand, that's bad for the private prisons. On the other hand, that's good for the taxpayers because the burden of housing, feeding, and providing medical attention for all those prisoners is going to drop rather significantly. But let me ask you this. I don't know if either of you are really very much involved in whatever movement is going on to bring legalization, full legalization in Colorado. But let me ask you this. If they fully legalize it, what happens to the people that are sitting in there doing 10 years because they had 3 joints on them?
Hopefully they get released. And, you know, this is... You know, there's actually vigils of people who, you know, have been locked up because of the care that they've given others. And, you know, this is a huge issue. You know, if you were to do a study of all the prisons and prisoners and people that are incarcerated and said, hey, listen, why don't we just try to lower that number by 1 million and save that average of $30,000 a year expense? the majority of people that you would choose to let out were people that are spending a couple nights or a short period of time in there for a cannabis incarceration. And this includes other offenses. It's not just this industry. But the great movie, you know, that I reference is American Drug War by Kevin Booth. He did a great job of capturing this issue. And, you know, for a long time in this country, corporations and private businesses have had their way, and there's a, you know, a response through the people, obviously, on the streets of the, you know, the Occupy movement, you know, for a change. And this is one area where, you know, people are going to have to stand up and see if we can't make a change for the better and save that cost to the taxpayer. You know, there's one great quote that you had mentioned from Mark Twain. I don't remember who said this one, but it's, all right, now you convinced me, now make me do it. And this is the time of people having to stand up and invest and be the change they want to see, you know, quote Gandhi, and make these things happen. And this is one area where it's very easy because of common sense to say, why are you locking somebody up for two joints? And if they're...
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm talking this evening with two gentlemen from Cannabis Science Incorporated, and we are talking about the medicinal values of extracts from cannabis, and we are talking about some of the barriers to people being able to get this. And in fact, you know, if you've got cancer, and if you are, at a point where they're saying there's nothing else we can do for you, why wouldn't they let you have this? I you know, that is insane that they won't let you have it. Gentlemen, what I would like to do at this point is open the phone lines. I would like to allow our audience to participate in the discussion. Are you open to that?
Certainly.
Absolutely.
All right, here we go. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
I'm from Georgia.
Okay, Steve from Georgia.
So glad to be able to...
Steve, turn your radio down. We can hear us in the background.
Yes, sir. Hold on.
Right on cue.
Yeah, there is, and it's kind of confusing because there's to the person who's hearing that because there's a delay.
Yeah. Okay, what I'd like to ask you, gentlemen, is have you spoken to anyone from the realm of cardiology? I know that the inflammatory response is highly responsible for heart problems. In fact, the presence of C-reactive protein in the blood is indicative of pending heart problems. And we can just about predict if a person is going to have a heart attack soon or not based on that level of C-reactive protein. And that is a result of too much inflammation happening. Now, if the cannabinoids can cut the inflammatory response, I would say that it would greatly reduce the risk of heart attacks. Have you guys spoken to physicians in the realm of cardiology?
Well, there are literally thousands of peer-reviewed articles out there, and there are a very significant number that are examining various cardiovascular-related phenomena, and you're certainly right. And what has been shown, in fact, is that the cannabinoid system does modulate the level of cardiovascular blockage, which tends to be driven by a pro-inflammatory response. And the cannabinoid system is inhibitory of that. And it has to do with activating macrophage and how they become embedded in the wall of the blood vessels and die there when they're no longer burning fat. And the cannabinoid system inhibits that inflammatory arm from doing that. And there's a variety of protective things that go on in terms of the muscle itself that are activated by cannabinoids. So it's pretty significant. But then there are other things that look concerning in terms of potential arrhythmias. You got to look at all sides of everything. And I would imagine, like most things, too much under the wrong conditions would be bad. But there does seem to be profound benefits.
Oh, absolutely. And heart disease is still the number one killer in America. And I would say that if the lobbyists in the AMA or in the American Heart Association or perhaps in also the physicians who treat stroke, because C-reactive protein also predicts the likelihood of a stroke. And strokes are terribly debilitating to people. I would say that promoting the use of cannabinoids would it would reduce deaths from heart attack and debilities from stroke. So, gentlemen, my hat is off to you. And if I had money to invest, it would certainly go your way. And
Kevin, thank you for entertaining my call.
And gentlemen, keep up the good work.
Thanks, Steve. I'll let you know, as well as the rest of the listeners, you know, for all this medical information, you can always check out our website, cannabisscience.com. But also a really good organization is the Patients Out of Time, which is the organization that's certified for continuing education units, the University of San Francisco, for the American Medical Association and American Nurses Association for doctors and nurses. And their website has many, many documents and case studies and all of the information you can need. So between the two sites of Cannabis Science and medicalcannabis.com, you should have everything that you need. And in addition, their conference, like Dr. Bob mentioned before, is in Tucson, Arizona, and at the end of April. And you really want to get involved and really learn about this and talk to the worldwide leaders in the industry. That's going to be the place to be.
All right, back to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hello, Kevin. This is Jerry.
Hello, Jerry.
I had a question for your guys this evening. The thing, I'm a big fan of what they're doing, first of all, and I think that they are absolutely on the cutting edge of doing great things to help many people, and I'm really excited about that. And I understand how difficult it can be to get folks to realize how important this is to help them get past some illnesses. The question that I have, because I've been looking into this, is the strain, is there a difference in the strains that you use? Is one better than the other?
There are a variety of different strains that have significantly different properties. And in addition, different people with different illnesses are going to match better with different strains. So it's a two-way street of variability, which is why typically I think it's best for a patient to find what works for them and how much they need to optimize their health.
Okay. The other question, I've been following the work of Rick Simpson. Are you familiar with him?
Absolutely, yeah. No, we've worked with Rick for a long time, and certainly Rick's work is the foundation for everything we do.
All right,
in terms of the cancer treatment.
That, but I wasn't for sure. All right. Well, good luck, persevere, and hopefully you'll be able to do the good work that you can do without being impeded by the powers that be. Thank you.
Well, that's why we're trying to educate people so that the voice of the people will be heard, because everybody has a problem with cancer. That's true of the prosecutors, the judges, and the prison guards. We're all on the same side, really, when it comes to cancer. So it's only the extremely stupid that would want to inhibit that solution.
Or the extremely greedy.
That's synonymous, actually, in many respects.
Absolutely. All right, thank you, Kevin.
Well, thank you. And for the purpose of the listeners, again, Rick Simpson, you can see him in the Phoenix Tears is what they were referencing as our base, but you can look that up on your own time, Rick Simpson and the Phoenix Tears, and see what Dr. Bob and the caller were discussing there for a moment. Thank you.
All right, Jerry, thank you for that call. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi there, Kevin. This is your friend Eli from Portland, Maine.
Hello, Eli.
Hey, Portland, right on.
Hi, guys. Like I said, I'm calling from the great state of Maine, and we are blessed to have some really excellent medical marijuana laws here in our state. We're a state that really still values personal freedom, and our laws really reflect that.
Yes, I know. I'm familiar with some of the early guys from the party out there.
I'm sorry?
Some of the pioneer guys who started the medical marijuana, and for some reason his name is blanking on me right now.
But that helped pioneer it in the state of Maine.
It was the Maine Vocals, wasn't it?
Yes, it
Donnie, was. Donnie something or other. Anyway.
Last year, we legalized medical marijuana in our state, and after giving it a year, we actually increased the openness and freedom of our laws to make it easier for people to access the medicine that they need. And it's really great. And I myself am a medical marijuana patient here in the state, and I get it prescribed for persistent pain left over from when I was hit by a car when I was younger. But it also really helps me with the symptoms of my ADD and ADHD.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's one of the conditions that a lot of jurisdictions, you know, don't really even recognize yet as their education curve, you know, continues. But, you know, everybody's willing to talk about cancer and, of course, the age-old glaucoma, but you really start realizing, again, how much of a life science as it gets into other mental disorders. And, you know, again, we've been able to identify over 20 conditions, you know, from AIDS to Alzheimer's to arthritis and, of course, chronic pain, diabetes, glaucoma, high blood pressure, you know, multiple sclerosis is huge. And, you know, I'll ask the caller, too, what is one of the best reasons that you think that Maine has done it right? You know, up there, and what's the biggest benefit it's given you as a patient?
Well, to answer the first part of your question, I would say that part of it is the electoral process here. We are, for a fairly large state, we've got a fairly small population, only about 1.2 million, and we have a direct voter ballot system where you just get a certain percentage of signatures, and anything that a citizen wants can go onto a statewide ballot, and everyone gets to vote on it. And because it's a fairly small population, you don't need that many people to get a signature to get onto the statewide ballot, and so everyone gets to vote.
And that's the voice of the people that Dr. Bob's referencing, and how everybody can get up off the couch, because, you know, life's not a spectator sport. Get involved and do something and call the politicians and find out what their opinions are. But, you know, this is a perfect example of where the people were able to get involved and make something happen for the better of the 1.2 million people that live there, and I congratulate them.
You know, how could anybody
To the second part of your question, the benefit for me my entire life growing up, before I became a legal patient, was even before I had my accident and had the persistent pain, was the benefits for my ADD and ADHD growing up as a teenager. I'm in my early 30s now, I'm 34. Mm-hmm. And aside from that, there's actually one thing I'd like to address, which I don't think many people address, which is important, I think, and that I only recently became legal, becoming a medical marijuana patient, but I've been benefiting from it my whole life. And Kevin, this is partially directed to you, because growing up in my life, being someone who used marijuana, you were the enemy. Police were the enemy, you know, because this is something that was benefiting me on a psychological level and later a physical level. And I was taking it, but anytime you are a regular marijuana smoker, there's always that paranoia in the back of your mind that you're going to meet a cop. And cops that therefore become the enemy, because you're associated with this fear all the time. And that has been removed from me, becoming a legal medical marijuana patient. And that was a surprise to me and has been one of the most beneficial aspects, I think.
Well, I understand that. And let me let you in on a secret. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I can't. We have a break coming up, so you'll have to you have to hang on. I'll tell you the secret when we come back from this break, all right?
Yeah, hang on.
All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We are on Final Approach. We only have a few minutes left, and we have on the telephone a caller waiting on the edge of his seat to hear the secret. And I'm going to tell you the secret right now. Are you ready for it?
I am.
When I was a cop in Louisiana, I was a deputy sheriff in Louisiana. Whenever a cop would stop somebody, and you know, and they got a couple of roaches in the, for those of you who don't know, roaches are the very small stub at the end of a marijuana joint. You've smoked it down as far as you can. They got those in the ashtray, or you stop them for some violation of traffic laws or whatever, and they had something on them. If it was, you stopped them for something that was very minor, right? Most of the older cops, and by older I mean they've been cops longer than 5 years, they've already seen so much crap and railroading going on that it's not uncommon. It was not. I don't know about now, but it was not uncommon for them to do what's called flagging. They would just take the baggie or the ashtray and flag it into the wind and let it blow out onto the side of the roadway. And then they would tell the person, look, you know this is illegal. I'm going to cut you some slack. I'm going to do you a favor. And maybe sometime in the future, I'll need you to help me, and maybe you'll help me.
And I've had that experience once or twice myself.
Well, here's the secret. There was so much of that going on that marijuana was growing all up and down the interstate. And they had to send the state out. The state sent, state police sent a crew out there to chop it all down and take it to a legal burn somewhere. And it was a ton of it. I mean, it was all growing all up and down the sides of the interstate. And so the secret is this. Not every pit bulldog is going to eat you. A guy with a badge is like a pit bulldog. He can eat you, and that's what causes the fear. But not every pit bulldog is of a frame of mind to eat you. And so, you know, on the one hand, I understand, even when I was a cop, I hated it when a cop car would get behind me while I was driving. You know, I'd be off duty and in my personal vehicle and some cop car would get behind me. I'd get nervous. I didn't want to get a ticket. I didn't, you know. You know, I understand that apprehension. I understand that fear. But don't look at all...
You know, as an otherwise, you know, law-abiding citizen, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But the thing is, don't look at all of them as the enemy, because you will make enemies that didn't have to be.
Right, and that's what I learned over time as I got older. But, you know, that's the place where you start from when you grow up that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was talking with, thanks for the call. I was talking with, a lady from, the Netherlands, who is an activist in the Netherlands. I met her when I was an international police officer, and she was on the same island I was working on, and she was there working to build radio stations because after 25 years of war, they had no radio stations. And she had the same view of cops that he expressed. And I said, let me tell you something. A lot of those cops that come out there on the front lines when you're in a protest somewhere, lots of those cops might be philosophically on your side as long as you don't do something that crosses the line, you know, something violent. Those cops are not going to hurt you. Don't make enemies of them by doing something where they have to act.
Right.
On the other hand, now having said that, let me say, I've been seeing in this country Billy Badass with a badge jumping out there and spraying people with pepper spray who are just sitting on the ground doing nothing. I've seen Billy Badass with a badge pummeling people into unconsciousness and stuff like that here in the land of the free. And those are thugs. Those people need to be in jail. Those people need to be in jail. Okay, let's take a call, and probably our last call for the evening. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hi. One thing I want to say, I've heard this on an interview, it was a comment by Catherine Austin Fitz, and what she said was, don't expect anything to change lawfully because the banks are laundering all that kind of money. So if drugs were legalized, they would be out of a lot of money. So I think that's where your problem lies.
Well, I will say this. I think this country is so screwed up, it's never going to be unscrewed. But it is possible. See, it is possible. On very specific issues, if you focus like a laser, if the people focus like a laser on an issue, they can force their will on that issue. They can force the politicians to act. And, you know, but
like
you got to focus. I'm sorry?
Just like they did in Maine.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
But you got to focus like a laser. You know, a flashlight and a laser are both lights, but only one cuts steel. It's the one that's focused. And, you know, just figuring that, you know, you can kind of generally go out there and be a good citizen and they're going to act in your best interest. That simply doesn't recognize the fact that you now live in the Bohica states of America. You don't live in the United States. You live in Bohica. Do you know what that is, John?
No.
Bend over. Here it comes again. All right. Thanks for the call. The money laundering and the money the banks make on that. That's a big issue.
Our industry has a huge issue when it comes to banking, because a lot of the banks won't take deposits from the dispensaries and the grows in the industry, and they fired 280E those out from the IRS. So there's a lot of work to be done on those fronts.
There is. Yeah. Okay, so where do we go from here, guys? We've got about a minute to end with that. Start closing the show down. Where do we go from here? Where do you guys go from here? I mean, my sister needs whatever help she can get. So where do we go from here?
What state is she in?
She's in Texas.
She has to move to Colorado, California.
Yeah. So where do you go from here? What's your next steps?
We're going to be dealing with expanding to other states. We're going to be putting something through the FDA. We have some very interesting funding-looking potentials. You know, people are interested because we're doing the right thing. We're doing the obvious thing when you think about it. You know, people are holistic. We're really four-dimensional, flow-dependent objects. And our cannabinoid system regulates that. So when you manipulate it, you change the whole body's environment and in general wind up promoting health. That's the basis of reality.
What about you, Robert? What do you think is the next step for cannabis science? And you have to do it in 20 seconds.
We look to continue to be the industry leader, and we look to keep realizing the fact that we're blessed because we're doing the right things for the right reasons, for the right people, and with the right people, and we ask everybody to support us. Any way they can, by either getting the word out and sharing their stories, or even, you know, joining us as a shareholder or perspective if the suitability applies. Of course, consult everybody and follow us at cannabisscience.com, or you can follow me personally at medicalcannabisindex.com.